This message comes from NPR sponsor Planet Oat. No deep thinking here. Planet Oat oat milk is rich, creamy, and an excellent source of calcium with vitamins A and D. Also, Planet Oat's unsweetened varieties have 0 grams of sugar. Visit planetoat.com for more.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Osea. This Mother's Day, treat mom to Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Go to OSEAMalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.
Hey, everybody. Maddie Sofia here.
And Emily Kwong.
Wishing you a happy Indigenous Peoples Day.
To Native American, Alaska Native, and Indigenous people in STEM, we see you and we appreciate you.
The Shortwave team is off for today, so we're encoring one of our favorite conversations from the summer. You will never see butterflies the same way.
Thanks for listening. Enjoy.
You're listening to Shortwave from NPR. Adriana Briscoe has probably forgotten more about butterflies than you or I will ever know.
Probably, yes. That's a fair assessment.
She's a professor of biology and ecology at the University of California, Irvine.
And my lab studies the evolution of coloration and vision in butterflies.
Now, you can probably guess that butterflies see with their eyes, thanks to these little light-detecting cells called photoreceptors. But they also have those photoreceptors in interesting places.
They have photoreceptors in their genitalia.
Yeah, genitals.
You can imagine how that might be beneficial to them because...
Dear listeners, I could not imagine how, but it turns out that females use these special cells that detect light on their genitals to figure out where to lay an egg.
They need to do this kind of quickly to avoid being eaten by a bird.
Mm-hmm.
So we think that it's probably evolutionarily advantageous for them because they can very quickly point and shoot and lay an egg.
I mean, that's as good a reason as any other to have, you know, photoreceptors in your genitals, I think.
Yeah. Yep. And males also have photoreceptors in their genitalia, and they need them in order to mate.
Mm.
So if you paint those genital photoreceptors over with black paint, the males try to court and try to mate, and they just can't complete it. They can't do it.
First of all, I have a lot of questions for whoever designed that experiment. And second of all,
I know.
Wow.
It's like, yeah, it's like, who thought to look there for this?
Yeah. This summer, this year, it is especially important to appreciate the little things, like a walk in the fresh air, peeping some butterflies. Adriana Briscoe is going to help us make sure the next time you do that, you will know a little bit more about how they do their peeping right back at you. I'm Maddie Sofia, and this is Shortwave, the daily science podcast from NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Integrative Therapeutics, with vitamins and supplements previously available only through practitioners, including Cortisol Manager. Unlock your best self with clinician-curated supplements from Integrative Therapeutics, now on Amazon. Support for NPR and the following message come from Indeed. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/shortwave. Terms and conditions apply.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Amgen, a biotechnology pioneer leading the fight against the world's toughest diseases such as cancer, heart disease, asthma, and osteoporosis. In a new era of human health, Amgen continues to accelerate the pace of change, operating sustainably and drawing upon deep knowledge of science to push beyond what's known today. With each decade, they reliably deliver powerful new therapies to patients. Learn more at Amgen.com.
Okay, yeah, so I thought the photoreceptors in the genitals thing was pretty cool, but then Adriana explained to me what she does with butterflies in her lab at UC Irvine.
Oh my gosh, it is so fun to train butterflies. It is so cool. Yeah.
To learn more about how butterflies see color, Adriana trains them to fly towards, let's say, a certain type of red light.
And so what we do is we train them to associate a colored light of a particular wavelength with something they really want. Butterflies always want nectar. And so we feed them by just placing them on the colored light, unrolling their proboscis, and letting them sip.
I mean, if the biggest question of your butterfly day is who's going to unroll your proboscis and stick you next to a yummy pile of laboratory-grade nectar, that's pretty good, right?
And after about a week,
Adriana introduces a second colored light, one they haven't been trained to detect.
You give them this choice, and if they correctly choose the trained color, you know that they can distinguish between those two colored lights. Now, there's a little twist to this, which is that you have to test them over a series of relative brightnesses of the two lights, because some insects are positively phototactic, meaning that they love flying toward bright light.
Mm-hmm. Aside from understanding butterfly vision better, knowing what kind of light and colors butterflies see could help us better understand how not to interfere with their environment.
If we want to design buildings and unnatural objects that are sustainable, that don't adversely affect our animal and insect populations, we need to know something about what their sensory world is like.
So we mentioned that Adriana has to make sure that the little butterfly isn't just flying towards the brightest light in her experiments. A lot of insects do that. And that's because scientists think it's part of a survival strategy.
You can imagine that if you're a butterfly flying in a forest under the canopy, that it's a little bit darker under the canopy than if you're flying above the treetops.
Mm-hmm.
And butterflies are constantly trying to avoid being eaten by lizards and birds. And one of the things that they do is they have an escape response, which is to fly towards the brightest patch of light they can find in their visual field.
Oh.
Yeah, and that's often a gap in the canopy of the forest.
On the subject of flying, it's actually something butterflies can't always do at the drop of a hat. They need to be warm to fly, but they're cold-blooded. So Adriana says, if you've ever seen a butterfly hanging out, slowly opening and closing its wings, that's called basking.
Where they can open their wings and the wings pick up sunlight and that helps warm them up.
Right.
But they also have to be very careful. Opening their wings is risky because it also means that usually their more colorful parts are now visible to potential predators.
On the flip side, their wings can also keep butterflies from getting too warm.
We used to think most of the butterfly wing was composed of more or less like dead cellular material. But it turns out that there are parts of the butterfly wing that are very much alive.
Their wings actually circulate hemolymph, which is kind of like butterfly blood, to help regulate their temperature, kind of like the ears of an elephant.
And incredibly, some butterflies, some male butterflies in their wings have incredibly physiologically active tissues.
Okay.
And they have little winged hearts.
What?
There are little structures which are pumping hemolymph in the wings.
Little butterfly hearts in their wings.
Which is like, to me, like totally amazing.
So yeah, warm, but not too warm. And once they're in the air, Adriana helped discover that some butterflies see in a way you or I can't. For example, monarch butterflies can see what's known as polarized light.
Light that you see in the blue sky is partially polarized by the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that the orientation of the photonic waves is kind of filtered in one direction.
Right.
And we can't really see that. So we lose that directional information.
Mm-hmm.
But butterflies have the ability to detect polarized light. And so one of the things I've contributed to is the discovery that monarch butterflies use ultraviolet polarized light when they navigate.
That means they can see ultraviolet polarized light from the sun, which helps them know where the sun is, even if it's cloudy.
And butterflies navigate by adjusting their flight pattern relative to the sun while they're migrating. And so it gives them this extra ability to continue their migration, even if the weather isn't good.
Got it. Awesome. So cool.
And of course, that's going to be tied.
Adriana wasn't always interested in butterflies. But as an undergrad in college, she knew she was interested in evolutionary biology. So she wrote to a professor in that department to ask if there was an open spot in his lab. And there was.
And so the next summer, he and his wife, who was also a biologist who studied butterflies, invited me to join their research groups to spend a summer doing field work in the Rocky Mountain Biological Lab. And I jumped at this opportunity. Mm-hmm. It was just an incredibly transformative experience for me. I ended up being surrounded by flowers, meadows, and butterflies. And that was my path to becoming a professor.
That summer, she spent in the Rocky Mountains, made Adriana realize how important teachers are in creating scientists. Not just those two professors who took her out in the field, but the teachers she grew up with, in her own family.
My earliest role models were my mother and my grandmother, who were both bilingual elementary school teachers. So they weren't scientists, mm-hmm. but they were role models for me in terms of educational attainment. And so I became curious, like, how many of our K through 12 public school teachers in California, where I live, are Latino and also teach science, math, or computer science. So I Googled this mm-hmm. and I could not find this information anywhere. Mm. And yet I thought, God, this is like such an important question. So
naturally, she and a graduate student wrote code to analyze more than 1 million California Department of Education records looking at the demographics of K through 12 public school teachers.
When we dug into the data to look at what percentage of teachers are Latino and also teach science, math, or computer science, the number was 3%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's just shocking to me. So what that means is that if you're a Latino student in California, there's a pretty good chance that you will never have a Latino teacher who teaches science, math, or computer science. And yet teachers, for sure, are the reason why I became a scientist.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. We focus so much on, you know, the percentage of college professors or high school teachers. But a lot of those decisions about who you are and who you can see yourself as happen way earlier than that. You know, like teachers create scientists, right? We know this.
Yeah, absolutely. There have been studies which have shown that girls who participate in summer science camp are much more likely to actually major in science when they're in college. And the hands-on experiences and having role models, absolutely crucial, both in terms of that early experience when I was in middle school and in terms of the college experience. It gave me a sense that this was something I could do because there were, for example, there were women, which opened up my eyes to the possibility that I could also become a scientist. And it helped me on my journey.
Adriana Briscoe. This episode was produced by Brett Bachman and Rebecca Ramirez, edited by Deborah George, and fact-checked by Rebecca Ramirez. I'm Maddie Sofia. Thanks for listening to Shortwave from NPR.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Easy Cater, committed to helping companies solve food. From employee meal plans to on-site staffing to concierge ordering support. With corporate accounts, nationwide restaurant coverage, and payment by invoice. EasyCater.com.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capella University. With Capella's FlexPath learning format, you can earn your degree online at your own pace and get support from people who care about your success. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Is it possible to engineer our way out of the climate crisis? Some entrepreneurs want to shoot particles into the stratosphere to combat global warming. Experts say regulations on this technology aren't keeping up. The world of solar geoengineering on the latest episode of The Sunday Story from NPR's Up First podcast.